Now in a black and white film, a loco appears. Atop a globe, a signal pulses from a tower. An RKO radio picture. Another loco. Two rifles crisscrossed inside an oval. Winchester Pictures Corporation presents a Howard Hawks production. Now, beams of light burn through the black screen and form the letters of a title. The Thing from Another World. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles. Screenplay by Charles Lederer. Based on the story, Who Goes There? By John W. Campbell, Jr. Music composed and directed by Dmitry Tiomkin. Director of Photography, Russell Harlan, ASC. Special effects by Donald Stewart. Film editor, Roland Gross. Sound by Phil Brigandi and Clem Portman. Art directors, Albert S. D'Agostino and John J. Hughes. Special photographic effects by Linwood Dunn, ASC. Copyright 1951 by RKO Radio Pictures. Produced by Howard Hawks. Associate producer, Edward Lasker. Directed by Christian Nivey. Nighttime. In a fierce wind, snow blows across frozen tundra. Nearby, a sign outside a lodge reads, Officers Club, Anchorage, Alaska. A tall, rail-thin man approaches. He grips the collar of his overcoat tightly around his neck and enters. Inside the brightly lit club, uniformed men sit around tables reading or playing cards. At the doorway, the tall man takes off his fedora, revealing his glasses and balding head. Beneath his coat, he wears a jacket and tie. He walks over to three officers and nods to one.
Hi, Eddie.
Hiya, Scotty. Cold enough for you?
Oh, I'm only faintly alive. It's 25 below.
You know everybody?
Nice.
We haven't met. McPherson.
Hi.
Ned Scott, Captain Hendry. Scotty just got in today.
Hi. Care to join us?
Oh, wait till I count my fingers. I may have lost one.
Scotty's a warm weather man. We met at Accra. Quite a spot. 105 in the shade, and the women hardly wore anything at all. Which was very intelligent of them. You just lie there in a hammock while three of them stand there fanning you. Remember, Scotty?
I remember.
Boy, when I die, I hope I go to Accra.
I was there.
I'm in. What are you doing here, Mr. Scott?
Looking for a story.
Scotty's a newspaper man. How many?
Three.
Cards?
I'll play these.
Oh, caught from ambush.
Check.
Well, I'll bet a buck.
And I'll fold.
Call.
Pair of queens?
I thought so, aces.
You ought to know better than to try fooling our captain. Only dames can do that.
Lieutenant Dykes, I promise
you. Slip of the tongue, Captain. What do you hear from the general, Scotty?
Oh, your General Fogarty's nursing his secrets like a June bride.
You know, I got an idea. There's a guy in Seattle who knows a whole radar defense story. Loves to talk. General McLaren. Now, you tell General Fogarty you want to go to Seattle, and Pat and I'll fly you there.
I met General McLaren, too.
It's warm in Seattle.
They got girls there.
Without fur pants on.
What about it, Captain?
I could be right.
You'll never be able to shoo our captain southward with his heart wrapped around the North Pole.
That'll do, Mr.
McPherson. What's going on at the North Pole?
Some scientists are holding a convention up there.
Looking for polar bear tails.
Ever hear of Dr. Carrington?
The fellow who was at Bikini?
The same. Well, they're holding about 2,000 miles north of here, a whole bunch. Botanists, physicists, electronics.
Including a pinup girl. Very interesting type, too.
Very. Captain Henry can give you any data you want on her.
Ken, you probably shouldn't have said that. You know how to
cap dry red.
Now, look. Someday I hope to have a navigator and a co-pilot who are at least dry behind the ears.
Oh, Captain.
You mail order it.
Captain Hendry, report to General Fogarty's quarters at once, please.
8 o'clock at night and a general yelling for his troops. Sounds like the old days.
Take my hand, will you?
Yeah. Hey, Captain, if it amounts to anything, ring me in on it, will you, please?
Sure. I gotta get a story someplace.
Later, Captain Pat Hendry approaches a house.
Come in.
He steps inside.
Close the door.
Yes, sir.
Hendry removes his hat and stands before a general and a colonel.
Good evening, sir.
Hello, Fred. Pat. Didn't take you long to get here.
Not many places around here to hide, sir.
Just got a queer message from your picnic party up north, from Dr. Carrington himself. Believe an airplane unusual type crashed in our vicinity. Please send facilities to investigate. Most urgent. What do you suppose you'd find up there besides a good-looking girl?
I don't know, sir. Any of our ships missing?
No.
No Canadians, are there?
Could be Russians. They're all over the pole like flies.
Don't get nervous. You're going.
Yes, sir.
Take along a dog team or anything you might need for rescue work.
Yes.
Come in.
Another man enters.
Close the door.
Freddy, do you suppose the Pentagon could send us a revolving door?
Could be, sir. We got 10 ghosts of pith helmets last week.
Weather report, sir.
Okay, that's all.
Oh, and tell the old dear if there's any more messages come in from Dr. Carrington, I want to be notified personally, no matter what the time.
Yes, sir. Well, here's your weather. There's a front moving in, but you ought to have time to get there and back without bumping into it.
General, that newspaper man, Scott.
Yeah, what about him?
He'd like to go with us.
It's all right with me if you maroon him up there. Now, don't get me wrong about who gets marooned. And I'd appreciate it if you didn't smash into the landing ski this time.
That was an unavoidable accident,
sir. Yeah, well, look, I'll expect you back sometime tomorrow night.
Yes, sir, and I'll close the door.
Just tell me what you find up there. No one tells me anything around here.
Now a cargo plane takes off from an airfield. In the cockpit, Hendry sits at the controls. Dark-haired, he has handsome, rugged features. His co-pilot, Eddie, has a boyish face and light hair. A private brings in two cups.
Want some coffee?
Hey, thanks.
Yes, sir.
In the cargo area, several men sit with a pack of huskies. Eddie shows his coffee cup to one of the men who goes over to the sleeping McPherson and Scotty.
Mr. Scott, coffee.
No, are we there?
No, sir. Hot coffee up front, sir. Lieutenant, coffee, sir.
The reporter, Scotty, joins the pilots.
Coffee?
Yeah, thanks.
How far away from camp?
3 hours, we slowed down. A little headwind.
A little headwind? Close to 40 miles.
Our captain has some funny ideas about the North Pole.
He thinks it's a garden spot. Come and bring the kitty.
Now, look, don't you two guys start.
You know, Perry went to the North Pole once. He retired with a sack full of medals.
Hey, Pat.
No, we go there every 3 weeks, just like it was Lover's Lane.
Mr. Scott, some people seem to think... Wait a minute.
Hello, Air Force 191, 191, from Polar Expedition 6. Can you read me?
Air Force 191, hear you fire text. Go ahead.
What's your position?
3 hours out.
Captain, switch over to your radio compass and check it against your magnetic heading.
What's on your mind, Tex?
We've got some kind of disturbance up here, and it's whacking away at everything.
What do you figure it's from?
Don't know. We noticed it last night.
6 to 8 degrees difference, Pat.
We're quite a bit off here, Tex.
You better home in on me. I'll leave the key open. Or would you rather have me sing to you?
Leave the key open.
I was afraid you'd say that.
At the North Pole outpost, Tex flips a switch. Several hours later, the cargo plane approaches the base. Hendry, Scotty, and Eddie gaze down at it from the cockpit window. Hundreds of feet below, tracks wind through the snow around several one-story buildings.
Hey, taxpayers ought to see this.
The twin-engine plane banks around, preparing its approach. Moments later, it touches down on the icy field. With ski-like runners attached to its wheels, it slides across the tundra, kicking up sprays of snow. Propellers whirling, it skis up to the base and comes to a stop. The side of the plane reads, United States Air Force, beside a star insignia. Hendry, wearing a parka, hops out and helps one of his lieutenants attach a ladder to the bay doorway. The others climb out, also wearing parkas trimmed with fur around the hoods. Several men rush over to escort them to the base. In single file, they trudge past buildings laden with icicles, past banks of snow and a pile of barrels. Moments later, at the mess hall. Simply furnished, the rustic room is decorated with a wooden table, benches, card tables, and foldable canvas chairs. Wearing an apron, the crew chief sets the dinner table with the help of the middle-aged Mrs. Chapman, her light hair styled in a braided bun. At a counter, her husband, the broad-shouldered Dr. Chapman, pours a drink. Nearby, a gray-haired scientist plays chess with a younger associate. Hendry enters and nods to the pair.
Hello, Doctor, Professor.
Scotty and the flight crew remove their coats and briskly rub their hands.
Justin, Ken, I bet you forgot my hat.
Tell me, I'm practically at the North Pole. Looks more like my old Kentucky home.
Mr. Scott, Mrs. Chapman.
Pleasure, Mrs.
Hello,
Chapman.
Doctor. Nice to see you. Dr. Chapman, Mr. Scott.
Dr.
Hello.
Chapman.
Scotty's a newspaper man.
You've come at an opportune time, Mr. Scott.
Well, I just happened to be in Anchorage when your message came through. I hope you have a good story.
No more than you probably know already.
Nothing more at all, huh?
Nothing but discussions as to what it might be. We all have different ideas. There's been quite an argument about it.
Where's Dr. Carrington?
He's in the lab. I'll see you later.
Doctor Henry Chapman, walks past a cook.
Hi, Lee. Coffee, Captain?
No, thanks. I'll be back.
Our captain seems in a hurry, Lee.
Yeah. Where do you two think you're going?
We're with you. We want to tell her that was an awful way to treat our captain.
Of course,
captain.
If you don't want us to go,
no, I we don't want to go.
I'm going to get even with you two guys someday.
We got a pigeon.
Henry heads into a hallway and walks up a staircase to an office door.
Come in.
Inside, a brunette types.
Hi, Pat. Welcome to our igloo. How was your...
He frowns.
Well, how was your trip?
It's all right. Not usual.
Well, that's fine. I think Dr. Carrington wants to see you.
Dr. Carrington's going to have to wait. I want to talk to him. I want to
what about?
It was a downright dirty trick you played on me.
Now, Pat, don't lose your temper.
Why did you do it? Just tell me why.
Well, your legs aren't very pretty,
you
and I didn't...
You have to write it on a note and put it on my chest. Other people got up before I did.
I'm sorry, Pat. I really
six people
didn't
read that note before I woke up. Now the whole Air Force is laughing at me.
Not so loud. They'll hear you.
They probably already heard. The only place it hasn't been is on a billboard.
Ooh, I didn't know you had such a nasty temper.
He skulks toward her.
Now, Pat, just be careful. Now, take it easy. Now, wait a minute. We had a lot of fun when you were up here. And then when you asked me down to Anchorage, you deliberately fed me a lot
of... Tell me something. Did you really drink all those drinks?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't throw any away or anything? Not a one?
No.
Holy cat. I thought I was good. And another thing. Why did you leave? When I woke up in the morning, you were gone.
Well, I told you I had to take that cargo plane back here.
You told me?
Don't you remember?
No.
Right after dinner. You were telling me all about a night in San Francisco.
Did I hear
when
that?
You,
Oh. What else did I do?
Well, you had moments of kind of making like an octopus. I never saw so many hands in all my life.
All right. Look, my only excuse is that I liked you. Right away. So I started wrong. Can't we begin all over?
How would you begin?
Well, I can think of several.
Never mind. We don't have time for that now anyway. I know Dr. Carrington's waiting to see you.
She leads Pat out. They go down the steps and approach the door to a lab.
What about this business of starting over again?
We'll talk about that later.
They enter.
Hello, Captain.
Passing a man in a lab coat, they find a scientist who has a refined gray beard and wears a crisp black blazer. He stares into a glowing machine with an assistant, then switches it off and reaches for a notepad.
Dr. Carrington, Captain Henry's here.
Yes, I know. How do you do, Captain?
Doctor.
Miss Nicholson, would you add a note to the others?
Sure.
November 2nd, 11:30 a.m. Deviation in Sector 19 continues 12 degrees 20 minutes east. No lessening or wavering of disturbing element. That's all.
Well, Captain, can we start now?
You mind telling me where we're going, Doctor?
48 miles due east from here.
You must have said an airplane crash. Is that what we're looking for?
I don't know, Captain.
I think you better explain, Doctor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Miss Nicholson, would you read Captain Henry my first notes?
Sure.
I was thinking only of the vagueness of my information. I dislike being vague.
November 1st.
Yesterday.
6:15 p.m. Sound detectors and seismographs registered explosion due east. At 6:18, magnetometer revealed deviation 12 degrees 20 minutes east.
That deviation has been constant.
We ran into it just before we reached here.
Such deviation possible only if a disturbing force equivalent to 20,000 tons of steel or iron ore had become part of the Earth at about a 50-mile radius.
You're getting a bit beyond me, but it sounds like a meteor, doesn't it, Doctor?
Yes, very much, except for one thing. We'll show it to Captain Henry.
Oh, yes, sir.
We have some special telescopic cameras. In the appearance of radioactivity, a Geiger counter trips the release and the camera's function. They were working last evening. Mm-hmm. This is the result.
They turn to a viewfinder.
This first picture was taken 3 minutes before the explosion, or 6:12. You can see the small dot low there in the corner. Mm-hmm. On the next picture, 1 minute later, that dot is moving from west to east, moving fast enough to form a streak.
What should this be using?
Thousands of a second.
Moving pretty fast, wasn't it? Here at 6:14, it's moving upward. 6:15, it drops to the earth and vanishes. A meteor might move almost horizontal to the earth, but never upward.
That it isn't a meteor.
That's obvious.
How do you determine the distance to the point of impact from here?
By computation.
Can I come?
Ready?
It's quite simple, Captain. We have the time of arrival of the sound waves on the detectors.
and also the arrival time of the impact waves in the seismograph. By computing the difference, it becomes quite obvious that they were caused by the traveling object, and the distance from here is approximately 48 miles.
You lost me, Gilbert. I'll take your word for it. One thing, Doctor, 20,000 tons of steel is an awful lot of metal for an airplane.
It is for the sort of airplane we know, Captain.
Yeah, we better be going.
I thought you'd think so. Redding, you'll check every quarter hour.
Yes, will you want me, Doctor?
No, it won't be necessary, Miss Lipp.
Will you come with us, Bill?
Yes, Doctor.
The men start out. Later, the cargo plane takes off. In the cockpit, Pat sits at the controls with Eddie at his side. Mac, the navigator, squats on the floor between them, studying notes.
We'll be there pretty soon now, Pat.
Bob, get Carrington up here.
Doctor!
Dr. Carrington steps forward.
We're almost 50 miles out, Doctor.
Your compass deviation, how are you navigating, Captain?
That peak ahead is practically due east. We got the wind before we left camp.
Very good, Captain.
We should be there about now, Pat. 10, 9, 8, 7.
Picking
six,
up something on the Geiger counter,
five,
sir.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Look there.
Below, they spot a gigantic impression in the snow.
Pat, the compass is in a spin.
Geiger's up to the top.
It's shaped like a round bottle with a long neck.
Yeah, that's it, all right.
You see some place to sit down?
Looks smooth about a half a mile back. We'll take a look.
Bob!
Yes, sir?
Get him ready. It might be rough.
Right, sir. Fasten your seatbelts, gentlemen. We're going to land. Sit down and hold on back there.
As they take their seats, Bob hooks his head into the cockpit.
All set for landing, sir.
The plane coasts toward the ground.
Half flaps. Full ridge.
Full ridge.
Half flaps.
In a fierce wind, it lands on the tundra and skates across the ice. Snow whips past at a nearly horizontal angle. Above, the skies are clear and nearly cloudless. The engines slow to a stop. Pat attaches the ladder to the doorway, and the party embarks across the snow. Later, a man on skis leads the group over the ice. The pack of huskies, tethered to a sled, follows directly behind, with the driver standing in back. The rest of the team use skis or snowshoes. They stop at the edge of the impression, at the rounded base. Its neck stretches out before them into the distance. A hunk of metal sticks out at the center.
Cat, what a weird-looking thing. Let me get a picture before you track up the whole place.
This Geiger counter's going crazy.
Something's melted that surface crust that's frozen over again into clear ice.
The bottle shape apparently was caused by the aircraft first making contact with the Earth out there at the neck of the bottle, sliding toward us and forming that larger area as it came to rest.
With the engine or engines generating enough heat to melt that path through the crust, then sink beneath the surface.
What could melt that much ice?
Let's get out and see.
Barnes?
The dogs over on that side.
The driver leads the huskies away. One man collects the snowshoes as the others head onto the patch of clear ice.
Dr. Chapman, could an airplane melt that much ice?
One of our own jets generates enough heat to warm a 50-story office building.
They stride out to the piece of rounded metal protruding from the ice. Crouching, Bob runs his hands up and down it as the others stand around.
Part of an airfoil, probably a stabilizer of some sort.
It's an airplane, all right. Flores, can you tell what metal that is?
I'll need some tools.
Barnes, bring some tools!
Several of the men walk across the ice.
Hey, it's down pretty deep over here. I can't see anything but a dark mass.
It's deeper over here.
Captain, may I suggest that we spread out and try to determine the size and shape?
Right.
Spread out, everybody. We're going to try to figure out the shape of this thing.
Staring through the ice at the shadow of the object buried below, the 10 men spread out. They come to a stop, forming a circle about 50 feet in diameter.
Holy cats. Hey. It's almost...
Yeah. Almost a perfect...
It is. It's round.
We finally got one.
We found a flying saucer.
Can anybody see anything through the ice from where you are?
Only an outline.
Nothing but a dark shape here.
Seems perfectly smooth. No doors or windows.
I can't see any engine.
I doubt if we find anything we call an engine.
Dr. Carrington, this isn't any metal I know. Probably some new alloy.
Get some filings for analysis.
Right.
Captain, I don't think we have a chance of chopping through the ice with axes.
I know, Doctor. We think so, too. We're going to try to melt it out with thermite bombs.
Oh, excellent.
Doctor, where do you figure it's from?
I don't know, Mr. Scott.
Well, from this planet?
I doubt it. Well, then, do you think that the answers to your questions will be much easier after we've examined the interior of the aircraft? Its occupants, if there are any.
Occupants? Why never? What a story. Where's every... Hey, Barnes!
Hold it, Scott. Sorry, no private messages.
What do you mean private? I'm going to send it to the whole world.
I wish you could, but this is Air Force information. We'll have to wait for authority to let you file a story.
Why, you've got your authority in the Constitution of the United States. For your information, it's called Freedom of the Press, and I'm sending a story,
Captain. Not from our ship, Scotty.
Where do you want these bombs, sir?
One over there by the stabilizer. Pat. Another one over in the far side in case we need it.
Pat, this is the biggest story since the parting of the Red Sea. You can't cover it up. Think what it means to the world.
I'm not working for the world, Scott. I'm working for the airport.
Look, Sonny, if you think I'm going to...
I'll take that.
Here's a detonator.
Oh, even the Russians wouldn't like that.
Get back to the ship and call the camp. Havtex radio Fogarty, we found a flying saucer, disc, whatever you call it, intact, embedded in the ice. We're going to try to get it out.
What about me?
Also ask if Scott can have clearance to send a story.
Yes, sir.
That's all I can do, please.
Well, don't apologize. You're just going to grow up to be another Fogarty.
Where are we going to touch this thing on? Over there.
Have you looked toward the west lately? That front's moving fast and the temperature's dropping, too.
Yeah, we don't have more than an hour. Where do you put those, Bob?
Right on the surface. Oh, tell Stone, will you, sir?
Right.
Say, what will this thermite do?
This is SOP, standard operating procedure for removing ice. Hook this wire up, will you, Lieutenant? It just melts it.
How fast does it work?
It'll uncover the whole saucer in 30 seconds.
Oh. All ready over here, Pat.
Be right with you.
Better clear the field, you fellas, over near the dog sled. Gonna get pretty hot around here in a minute.
The short, chubby Mac places a rectangular bomb beside the hunk of metal. Wires trail from the bombs across the ice. The men jog over to the sled, where Bob snips the wires off of spools. Pat rushes over with a detonator.
Okay, Bob, hook her up. We'll try to stabilize it first. Use the other one if we need it.
A few minutes from now, we may have the key to the stars. A million years of history are waiting for us in that ice.
Let me know when. I want to get a picture.
All ready, sir.
Ready here.
Let her go, Bob.
Bob triggers the detonator. A cloud of sparks shoots out from the ice, then vanishes into the air.
Okay, all clear.
Wait a minute, everybody. Stay back.
The ground starts to shake.
Burning under the ice.
Careful, Captain.
Black smoke and fire curl from the ice.
What's happening? Tell me, Doctor.
The tundra quakes violently.
Get down flat, everybody!
The men drop onto their stomachs. As a second explosion rips across the tundra, a cloud of fire billows into the sky. Small chips of ice rain down on the men, who slowly get to their feet.
Everybody all right?
That last explosion was the engine. Sergeant, will you try your Geiger counter?
Only a trace.
That's just residual. It's all gone. Secrets it might have given us a new science. Gone.
That's just dandy. Standard operating procedure.
I should have thought.
You sure should. Greatest discovery in history, up in flame. Turning a new civilization into a 4th of July piece.
Bob crosses the ice toward the smoking remains.
Captain, I'm getting something over here.
Probably a fragment from the saucer.
You may salvage something yet.
The others join him near the smoldering ice hole. Bob grips his box-shaped Geiger counter.
Hold it, everybody. I'm getting a reaction. Let me get a reading. Getting warm. Hotter now.
He inches over the ice with the others surrounding him. Bob takes careful steps forward, then one step back.
Here's where it's coming from.
Eddie and Pat fall to their knees and peer into the ice.
What is it?
Looks like a man.
Yeah, it's got legs and a head. I can see him.
Yeah. Must be over 8 feet long.
Somebody got out of that saucer?
Got out or was thrown out and frozen fast before he could get clear.
Man from Mars.
How do you propose getting him out, Captain?
I don't know.
Use more thermite.
Not
whatever's quickest. We don't have much time.
Here's some axes. You can chop around to put the whole block in the sled and take it to the plane.
I agree
with
that.
Get started. Give me room. Bob, clear the sled off and bring it over here. Eddie, get the ship warmed up. And be ready to get out of here in a hurry.
Taking a pickaxe, Scotty helps the men chop through the ice. Later, the plane takes off again. Later still, it soars above undulating drifts of snow. Inside the cargo area, the men sit with the dogs. Barnes, their driver, pats one on the head. Behind them, a massive block of ice sits roped to the sled. In the cockpit, Mac enters with a spiral journal entitled Air Force.
Pat, I think we made a mistake.
What do you mean?
You ever read this? Department of Defense, Office of Public Information, Washington, D.C., December 27, 1949. Bulletin 629-49 regarding item 6700, extract 75,131. The Air Force has discontinued investigating and evaluating reported flying saucers on the basis that there is no evidence.
Probably make you a general for destroying evidence that they're wrong.
The Air Force said that all evidence indicates that the reports of unidentified flying objects are the result of one misinterpretation of various conventional objects.
Didn't look very conventional to me.
Second, a mild form of mass hysteria.
That'd be when General Fogarty got to shaking hands with that thing in the ice.
They glance back at the ice block.
What are the other reasons?
Third, that they're jokes.
Why don't you say the number of that bulletin was?
629-49, item 6700, extract 75,131.
Oh, that one.
Eddie furrows his brow for a moment, then breaks into a grin. At dusk, the plane touches down near the base. Snow sprays against its underbelly as it skids to a stop. Near the tail, its insignia gleams against its metal body, a five-pointed star inside a circle with three stripes on either side. Moments later, the group escorts the Huskies, which drag the sled loaded down with a block of ice. The men help push it past the radio tower up to the main cabin. Lights shine from its frosted windows as the sky darkens above. Carrington walks down a low incline to a cellar door and opens it. It leads into a large storage room filled with supplies. As he holds the door open, the others carefully slide the sled down the hill and into the room. The hunk of ice resembles a sarcophagus with a dimpled, frozen surface.
Keep tight on those ropes! Easy, huh? Keep it going!
Keep it going!
Whoa!
Take it easy.
Can't see through the ice too good.
Good enough to know that where he came from, this shirt I'm breeding for beauty.
Well, what are we doing now? Defrost him?
Well, this ice will melt pretty soon.
Doctor, can you control the heat in this room?
No, Captain. This is our storeroom. The temperature is constant here.
Won't be necessary to melt the ice. We can probably chip it away.
I'm sorry, Professor. We're not going to melt it or chip it. Eddie, open that window, will you?
You mean we're not allowed to examine it?
I mean just that, Doctor.
This is stupid.
We're scientists.
And Dr. Carrington's in charge here.
Hey, Pat, these windows don't open.
It's practically certain we'll be asked by your superiors to make a study of it.
Probably will, Doctor, but we can't permit it now.
We don't have to have any permission.
Eddie, break that window.
All right.
He picks up a pair of snowshoes.
Sorry, we already pulled one boner out there in the ice. I'll admit I know anything about this, but until I receive instructions from my superior officer on what to do, we'll just have to mark time.
Captain, you have no authority.
Well, I'd like to talk about it further. We better do it in the corridor. It's going to get pretty cold in here.
Last is a very sensible suggestion, Captain.
Come on. Mac?
Yeah?
You stay here. We'll take 4-hour shifts. And it's hands off for everyone, understand?
Yes, sir.
Gonna be warm enough?
If I'm not, you'll hear me squawking.
Bob will bring us some dinner.
I could use something to read. Nice, quiet horror story.
Might be kind of tame for you, sir.
They find Dr. Chapman and others in the corridor.
Well, gentlemen?
Captain Henry. Excuse me, Doctor. May I?
Certainly.
Captain, in relation to removing the body from the ice, I'd like to point out there are organisms that survive after death,
yeah.
But cold can destroy them. Now, in view
Doctor,
of that...
Doctor, I don't know anything. On the other hand, these same organisms may be dangerous. They may be carrying disease germs from another planet, germs we couldn't cope with medically.
Thank you, Doctor.
No, I can't agree with you, Dr. Chapman.
I don't either.
Well, here's another. We don't know what effect the air of our Earth may have on this creature's remains.
Sort of go up in smoke, like the saucer, huh?
Nonsense.
Isn't that a little far-fetched?
So is a
gentlemen,
man from Mars.
We're getting nowhere.
We're consistent.
I suggest that Captain Henry communicate with his superior at once.
I'm getting senile. We should have done that first thing.
I'm surprised, Captain, that you didn't try to reach your general on our way back here.
We did. Barnes?
I tried to send a message through your radio operator, sir. Couldn't get through this time. Too much interference.
I see. My apologies, Captain.
Yes, Doctor.
They enter the radio room and find Tex.
Hi, Captain.
Hi, Tex.
You sure stirred up a fine lot of trouble.
Sorry, Tex. We're in a hurry. Did you send out my message?
Sure did.
Did you get an answer back?
This came about an hour ago. Can you read it?
No, you better.
Fogarty to Henry. Withhold newspaper story until permission from Air Force HQ.
There you are, Scotty.
Oh, fine. Now somebody else will get the story.
Scotty.
Remove aircraft from ice at once. Use thermite bombs if necessary to melt ice.
Oh, that's what I like about the Army. Smart all the way to the top. Well, Captain, I'd let you off the hook for the thermite deal.
Take it easy, Scotty. Go ahead, Tex.
Erect temporary structure to protect aircraft until my arrival. And here's another one. Came a few minutes ago. Could only get part of it.
Go ahead.
Everything grounded, can't join you, something or other. Want you, something or other, advise immediately.
That sounds like Fogarty.
And then it got really fouled up.
You mean you're not getting anything?
Not a thing. Static's knocking it right out of the air. Voice and keyboard.
What about your stuff?
Don't know if they're getting it or not. I doubt it.
I don't believe it. Even the Pony Express got through.
Well, Doctor?
In view of this new situation, I suggest...
It doesn't alter the old one, sir.
No, we don't agree with you, Captain. There's no reason to delay it.
That's it. Tex, I'd like to leave Barnes here to help out all he can.
Sure, Captain.
Barnes, keep trying to get through. I want to get a message to the general.
Yes, sir.
Tell him the aircraft was completely destroyed by the thermite bomb. Tell him we found a passenger at the wreck.
You got a fellow from Mars? Where?
On ice, buddy, on ice.
Tell him we're keeping the body in a block of ice, and Dr. Carrington wants permission to remove the body from the ice for examination. We're standing by for instruction before further actions.
Yes, sir.
You got anything to add to that, Doctor?
Yes, one very essential point that I consider it vitally important that the examination be made.
By all means, yeah.
Have that, Barnes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Captain. That's all that concerns me. Richards, when you get your answer, I'll expect you to let me know.
Yes, Doctor.
Carrington and the other scientists file out. Scotty turns to Pat.
Wait till I interview the doctor about what he thinks of you.
Ought to be pretty good.
If it isn't, I'll make it good.
Tex, keep trying. Barnes, if he gets through, ask the general again about clearing Mr. Scott.
Don't try to soft soap me. I don't like you any better.
Mind the business, Scotty.
I'll eat with you, Eddie. I'll
send you boys back to chow.
Right, sir. Oh, Captain, I'm going out and check the ship and tire down good. We'll need our gear, too. This storm may blow for a couple of weeks.
Get some of those Eskimos to help you.
Oh, they took off and they saw that cake of ice. They'll need a lot of coaxing to get them back. I thought if Mr. Scott and the lieutenant would give me a hand...
I thought I was a guest.
I thought an officer.
Oh, you can be ordering me around while you're carrying the other end, sir.
That'll help a lot, sir.
Later, Eddie relaxes while Pat shaves.
You know, Pat, I thought we were going to have a little trouble tonight.
So did I.
Those geniuses were really ready to tear you apart.
Ah, they're kids, most of them. Like 9-year-olds drooling over a new fire engine.
Professor Voorhees, please come to the laboratory as soon as possible.
Holding a meeting.
Yeah.
The whole thing's weird.
You know what it reminds me of?
What?
The time I was stuck on Bulan Island with the old 97th Bomber Group. An Army nurse came ashore one day and caused just about the same disturbance as this guy from Mars has around here.
What happened to the nurse?
She liked it there.
Scotty enters the barracks.
Scotty, what's new?
What's new? What more do you want?
Biggest story ever to hit this planet. And I run into this human clam. What are you getting pretty for? You'll never look good to me. Oh, that's not for you, Scotty.
It is. The captain here passes the buck to General Fogarty. Fogarty takes it to Washington.
Who will Truman ask when it gets to him?
Margaret.
I've got to find some way to get back to civilization.
Oh, for instance?
I don't know. Pogo sticks, kitty cars, gondolas, dog sleds. Hey, Barnes, any word come through from General Fogarty?
Plenty. Nothing about you, sir.
Oh.
No, I think the old man's gone crazy. Sorry, sir, I shouldn't have said that, but if he hollers any louder, we won't need a radio.
What did you gather was the gist of the general's conversation?
It's coming through pretty scrambled, sir, but I understand there's been a leak in the newspapers.
I knew it. Like pouring water through
Everybody
a sieve.
Everybody wants more information. Congress, Secretary of
State Department.
And especially General Fogarty. He's having a fit.
Isn't huh? Anchorage picking up anything on us?
Not a crackle, sir. We're picking up them because they have a stronger station.
A picture just came to me. My editor. Climbing all over his office. Yelling, stamping his feet, breaking windows. He'll probably shoot himself by midnight.
Take it easy, Scotty.
Just a minute, Captain. I'm not sure you're quite ready. You may have missed a spot. Wouldn't want her to see our captain.
Son, would you like to do double guard duty tonight?
No, sir. I wouldn't.
Oh, Captain.
Yes, Sergeant.
Could I see you for a minute, sir?
Sure.
Pat goes into the mess hall with Bob. They stand at one end of the room, away from several of the others.
What is it about?
I don't like to bother you like this, Captain, but it's about Lieutenant McPherson sitting in there with that thing in the block of ice.
Getting nervous.
Well, he wouldn't want me to tell you, sir, but he's having kittens. I haven't heard him squawk like this since we were over Reckonberg.
Really?
You see, sir, the ice is clearing up, and we can see the thing pretty good now. It's got crazy hands and no hair, and the eyes,
When they're open, they look like they can see.
Bob, I haven't heard you. Oh,
it's got me too, sir, and I wasn't in there very long. Besides that, it's pretty cold. I got the lieutenant an electric blanket.
Good.
Captain, I got a suggestion.
Go ahead.
Well, now, instead of these four-hour shifts, we could cut them in half, you see.
Okay. You tell Barnes to take over in a half an hour at 2200. You take over at 2400, and I'll relieve you at 0200.
I think you're right, sir.
I think you are.
Yes. Thanks.
As Bob walks off, Pat glances across the room. Nikki sees him and walks over. She has fine, pretty features and wears a snug sweater and slim black skirt over her curvaceous figure.
I want to talk to you.
Sure.
Pat, what's really going on?
Oh, nothing. I just can't agree with your pal, so I had to set a guard. They'd have that thing out waltzing with him. It's not my job to decide.
No, no, that isn't what I meant. What does that boogeyman on a gig of ice really mean?
I don't know, Nikki.
They have a smoke.
Well, does it mean that we're going to start having visitors from other worlds, other planets, dropping in on us? Do we have to return the call, or...
I know. Yesterday, I'd said it was crazy.
I say it's crazy now.
Other people think so, too. Forget it. Tomorrow, it all seemed different.
I suppose so. I like the way you handled this whole mess, Pat.
Well, I just as soon not... No, it's funny. I'm glad I was here.
I am, too. You're much nicer when you're not mad.
Sounds promising. How about that business of beginning over again?
Well, I think I'll buy you a drink this time. I think you've earned it.
They head for the door.
That is, if you want one.
You can tie my hands if you want them.
That might not be such a bad idea.
You mean that?
Well, you suggested it.
All right, I'll bring a rope.
Later, in Nikki's office, Pat sits with his hands tied behind his back. Nikki stands over him, holding a cup to his lips. He tilts his head back and drinks. She wipes off his mouth.
Do you want another one, Pat?
Don't you think you could untie me now?
Not so. What's the matter?
You gals, if a guy asks you to have dinner and buys you a drink or tries to kiss you, he's a wolf. Oh. What are you laughing at?
You haven't kissed me, have you, Pat?
I haven't tried.
How do you know?
Oh, stop bringing that up.
Never mind, you haven't. Maybe if you... Go on with what you were saying.
What?
You know, about the dinner and the drink.
Oh, well, if the same man asked you to have 30,000 dinners and the same amount of drinks...
Then he's not a wolf anymore.
No.
That's fine philosophy. So you really want your hands untied. And just when everything was so nice and peaceful. You know, I'm glad we decided to start over again. I like it.
She pecks him on the lips.
I like that, too.
Oh, talk about Japanese tortures.
No, not at all. I think this was a great idea. Come here.
She kisses him.
Well, look at you. Sitting there like a civilized man instead of grabbing around like a throwback.
He unties himself.
Well, if you weren't tied up, I wouldn't dare have told you how much I liked you. You know, Pat, the trouble with you is that you just don't know anything about women. What a woman wants is to...
She eyes him.
How long have you been loose?
Long enough. It's been a very interesting evening. Good night, Miss Nicholson.
Pat, if you walk out of me like this...
Don't worry, I wouldn't go, except I got to check up.
He locks onto her gaze, draws her into a lingering kiss, then releases her.
I'll get a good night's sleep.
I'll see you in the morning.
Later in the storeroom.
It's the eyes being open that get you. It makes it feel so... Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Barnes just got here. Sure glad I'm not looking at that guy anymore.
You all set, Barnes?
Yes, sir. Got an electric flying suit and a pot of coffee.
Bob will relieve you at 2400.
Right, sir.
Take it easy.
Yeah.
Mac walks out with Pat. Alone, Barnes warily approaches the block of ice. Through the ice, he gazes at a bald alien lying still. Barnes backs away. As snow wafts in through the broken window, he grabs a blanket, throws it over the block, and completely covers it. Rubbing his hands together, he sits on a nearby chair with his back turned to the tall, broad-shouldered creature embedded in the ice. Barnes takes a quick glance over his shoulder.
That's better.
As he hooks up a coffee pot, our view runs from the blanket down a wire to its heating controls. Later, water drips from under the blanket. Barnes sits reading and unaware, his back still turned to the ice block. Outside, the pack of white huskies rises up out of a snowdrift. Inside, water continues to trickle off the ice block. Barnes removes his gloves, picks up a paper cup, and reaches for the coffee pot. A shadow rises behind him and stretches over his back. Barnes drops the cup and slowly turns. He jumps out of his chair and pulls out a pistol. He ducks out of the storage room. Tearing into the hallway, he knocks over boxes and then heads for the mess hall where Scotty sits with Dr. Chapman.
What's the matter, Corporal?
Dr. Chapman, where's the captain? I've got to tell him. I've got to tell him that thing's alive. I saw it, sir. Chase me. That thing's alive. It's not dead. It's Captain Henry.
Pat enters with his men.
That thing's alive, sir. I saw it. I shot at it. I hit it. I know I hit it. Nothing happened. It just kept coming at me, making a noise like a cat mewing. Captain, it was awful. If you could have seen those hands and those eyes. Captain, you've got to do something about it. You've got...
Chapman splashes water on his face, then helps him into a chair.
Mac, Bob, get some guns.
Yes, sir.
Now, Barnes, what happened?
I'm sorry, sir. I don't know exactly, but all of a sudden it was out of the ice and alive and coming at me. I shot at it and hit it. Nothing happened, so I slammed the door and ran.
Easy, easy.
Sorry.
Here, Captain.
You know,
Eddie, take care of him, will you?
Pat brushes past Carrington and the other scientists.
Get back here, please.
Stepping into the corridor, he approaches Nikki.
Get back with the rest of them.
She stands in the doorway of her room, tying a belt around her robe. Pat presses his ear against the door to the storage room, then bursts inside. The melting block sits empty, an outline of the creature pressed into the ice. Pat and the others gaze down at it.
What could have...
The kid said he was alive, and I believe him.
I knew it. All the time I was here, I could feel it.
Here's what did it. This blanket was on, and still warm.
The outer door flies open. Bob shuts it.
Get out of here, all right?
Get some parkas and boots and bring a flashlight.
Listen, I'll tear him to pieces.
We must save him. Hold it, Doctor.
He mustn't be
hurt. Freeze to death out there in 5 minutes. Use your head.
I expect you're right, Captain. I was a little over-anxious.
Look over here, Captain!
Through the window, they spy the creature among the dogs. The thing grabs one and hurls it to the ground. Mac and Scotty bring parkas.
May I have one, Captain?
You better let us go, Doctor.
Outside, the thing grapples with two huskies.
Hey, Doc, can you see anything out there?
Not much.
The animals pull him into the snow.
You all set?
Let it go.
As the officers cock their rifles, Pat opens the outer door. A blast of snow rushes into the room. The men bow their heads against the wind, then rush into the night. Outside, a dog bites down on the thing's hand. He pulls away and runs off as Pat and his men approach. The officers go over to the dogs. Several lie dead. Eddie shines a flashlight into the distance, searching for the thing, then beams it down onto the ground. A severed hand lies in the snow. Bob gingerly picks it up and shows it to the others. The fingers have sharp claws. Blood covers the stump at the end of the forearm. Bob eyes Pat, who signals for them to go back inside. Later, in the mess hall, the scientists sit at a table examining the severed hand. All of the others stand around, watching curiously. Carrington whips out a thermometer and shakes it several times. He presses it against the flesh for a moment, then turns to Pat.
Captain Henry, it would help me if you, any of you, would describe what you saw out there.
Well, it was too cold to see well, but the dogs had him down tearing at him.
Yeah, I saw him get up with three of them hanging on his arm.
Then he threw one dog at the rest.
When we got there, two of them were dead.
Or they looked like they'd been through a chopper. Mm-hmm.
Where did you find the arm?
It was partly under one of them, wasn't it?
Couldn't dogs tear off an arm? This kind of an arm.
Be careful, Doctor. Those barbs, whatever they are very sharp.
Seems to be a sort of chitinous substance.
Speak English, would you, Doctor?
Something between a beetle's back and a rose thorn.
Thorn-fingered, huh?
Amazingly strong.
Very effective if used as a weapon.
Very. You don't have to worry about that. Not with an arm off and out in that cold. He's dead now.
He got along all right in a block of ice for over 24 hours.
He's pretty spry for a guy with 12 dogs on him.
He sure after was.
Losing an arm.
I'm losing my mind.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazingly strong.
Strange. Sure of it.
That is blood on the hand, isn't it, Doctor?
Yes, but not his blood.
Probably from one of the dogs.
There's no blood in the arm. No animal tissue.
Dr. Stern, can I have a look at this under the microscope?
He gives Stern tweezers.
No, Mr. Scott, I doubt very much if it can die, as we understand dying.
Cats.
Yes. Well, Doctor?
No arterial structure indicated. No nerve endings visible. Porous, unconnected cellular growth.
Just a minute. Imagine. Just a minute, Doctor. It sounds like you're trying to describe a vegetable.
I am. Are you getting all of this?
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Quiet, Mr.
You know, Doctor, that could be why the bullets fired by Sergeant Barnes had no seeming effect.
That's right.
Merely holes drilled into vegetable matter.
This green fluid here, like plant sap.
We'll probably find it has a sugar base.
Please, Doctor, I've got to ask this.
Mr. Scott? It sounds like, well, just as though you're describing some form of super carrot.
That's nearly right, Mr. Scott. This carrot, as you call it, has constructed an aircraft capable of flying some millions of miles through space, propelled by a force as yet unknown to us.
An intellectual carrot. The mind boggles.
Shouldn't. Imagine how strange it would have seemed during the Pliocene age to forecast that worms, fish, lizards that crawled over the earth were going to evolve into us.
Look,
on the planet from which our visitor came, vegetable life underwent an evolution similar to that of our own animal life, which would account for the superiority of its brain.
Dr. Carrington...
Its development was not handicapped by emotional or sexual factors.
Dr. Carrington, you're a man who won the Nobel Prize. You've received every kind of international kudos a scientist can attain. If you were for sale, I could get $1 million for you from any foreign government. I'm not therefore going to stick my neck out and say that you're stuffed absolutely clean full of wild blueberry muffins. But I promise you, my readers are going to think so.
Not for long, Mr. Scott. Not if they happen to know anything about the flora of their own planet.
You mean there are vegetables right here on Earth that can think?
A certain kind of thinking, yes. You ever hear of the telegraph line?
Not recently.
Or the... Is it the acanthus century plant, Dr. Stern?
Yes.
Go ahead, Doctor. That's your field.
Well, the century plant catches mice, bats, squirrels, any small mammals. Uses a sweet syrup as bait. And holds onto its catch and feeds on it.
May I have a snack, please?
And what's the telegraph vine?
Well, a vine, research has proven, can signal to other vines of the same species. Vines 20 to, well, 100 miles away. Intelligence in plants and vegetables is an old story, Mr. Scott. Older even than the animal arrogance that has overlooked it.
That's one for Ripley.
Look here. I took this from under the soft tissue in the palm of the hand.
Seed pod.
Uh-huh. Seed pod?
Yes. The neat and unconfused reproductive technique of vegetation. No pain or pleasure, as we know them. No emotions. No heart. Our superior. Our superior in every way. Gentlemen, do you realize what we've found? A being from another world, as different from us as one pole from the other. If we can only communicate with it, we can learn secrets that have been hidden from mankind since the beginning of...
They glance at the table, where the hand clenches and unclenches its clawed fingers. Carrington, his eyes wide with awe, takes a step closer.
Oh, it's moving.
Miss Nicholson.
Yes, Doctor.
At 12:10 a.m., the hand became alive. The temperature of the forearm showed a 20-degree rise. Because of this rise in temperature, I believe it was able to ingest the canine blood with which it was covered. I believe that this...
You mean it lives on blood?
Mac brings over axes.
This is the best we could find, Pat.
This doesn't work. I don't know what will.
Where are you going, Captain?
Find our visitor, if we can.
One moment, Captain.
They enter the hallway.
Up there. Bob and Mac, check the storeroom again. Bolt any outside door.
Captain, when you find what you're looking for, remember it's a stranger in a strange land. The only crimes involved were those committed against it. It woke from a block of ice, was attacked by dogs, shot by a frightened man. All I want is a chance to communicate with
it. Doctor, you can do anything you want with it, provided it's locked up in a safe place.
Nothing in here, Pat. Captain, we catch up with our pal. Give me a chance to get a picture before somebody makes a salad of him, huh?
Sure, Scotty. Nothing.
They step into the radio room.
Bob, get up with
him. Hey, what's up?
Looks like a lynching
party.
Any
visitors? Not a soul. Captain, I got part of a message from the general. He said to wait on Mr. Scott's story.
Yes,
Scott. Oh, what's the difference? Nothing's going out anyway.
Let's get out of here.
Hey, what are you guys looking for?
Could have come in here.
Who couldn't come in?
Man from Mars.
You mean he's alive and running around loose?
Keep your door locked, Tex, and watch who you let in. Use your fire axe if you have to. Gun's no good.
What do you mean a gun's no good? Now look,
back in the hall, the men stride over wooden walkways.
Eddie?
Reaching a fork, Eddie turns one way, Pat the other.
Hold it, Captain.
Everyone freezes as Bob studies his Geiger counter. A light flickers on top of the box. The sergeant inches forward, and the frequency of flashes decreases. He steps to the left, then back to the right, and slowly walks over to a door. Pat watches as the light flickers rapidly.
There's something in here, all right.
No, you're a little off base. That's the minerality lab. We've got radioactive isotopes in there.
Your Geiger's reacting to a room full of uranium ore samples.
Yeah. Pat opens the door and flicks on the light. Stepping inside, he takes a good look around the room, then shuts the door. The group approaches another door with a sign reading, "Keep doors closed."
This door's locked.
Dr. Stern has the key.
Oh, yes. None of the others are locked. What's in here?
The greenhouse. The Eskimos have a weakness for our strawberries.
Strawberries in the North Pole.
Excuse me.
The wavy-haired Stern unlocks the door and opens it. They enter a lush greenhouse.
Mac, Bob, look under these tables.
Plants of various shapes and textures fill rows of tables. The men glance under them.
Bob, check that outside door.
Carrington goes over to a table and eyes it curiously.
Door's locked, sir. Nothing up here, Pat.
We're still batting zero.
Scotty bites down on a strawberry.
Well, Doctor?
Captain, I had...
Nothing up that other corridor, Pat. Any suggestions, Doctor?
It's obviously not inside.
Start looking outside.
Several of the men step into the hall, leaving the scientists.
Captain, half an hour outside now is about all we can stand. We'd better do it in relay.
You're right, Dr. Chapman. We'll have to work out a
schedule. Will you close the door, please?
That reminds me, we're going to have to tell General Fogarty what happened.
We're liable to become famous. So few people can boast that they've lost a flying saucer and a man from Mars all in the same day. Wonder what they'd have done to Columbus if he'd discovered America a bit mislaid.
Back in the greenhouse.
Gentlemen, I just happened to notice. Look at these moles.
They turn to a table covered with rotting plants.
Well, they're wilted. The only thing that
could... A blast of icy air if that rear door was opened. Have another look at that lock, will you, Professor?
Yes, Doctor. 10 or 15 seconds of such exposure would do it.
Exactly. What would that lead you to?
He stares down at drops on a wooden container. The others turn toward it.
Without a doubt.
Dr. Carrington, you were right. The lock's been forced and bent back into position again. The key's gone. Someone has entered and gone and locked the door from the...
outside.
Look, see how it glistens in the light?
It's a smear of... blood sap.
From the wounded arm?
You don't suppose?
Open it, please.
A scientist reaches for the lock. As he opens the container, a dead husky tumbles out.
Sled dogs.
Not even cold yet.
Doctor, doesn't it seem kind of shrunken? Yeah.
Is there any blood in there?
None.
No blood.
No blood. Its blood has been drained.
Everything falls right into line. What could be more natural for a being of its kind than seeking out the only open earth within miles? It came here for refuge, heard us, and ran. It's been here, it'll come back again.
We'd better tell Captain
Henry. I don't agree with you, Doctor. I think it far better if science rather than
Doctor,
the army...
Doctor, are you sure this is the best thing to do?
I'm sure we can communicate with it. We must. It's wiser than we are. It's our only chance to talk to it, to learn so many things.
Doctor Carrington, he's
sure,
right.
Sure, you can Definitely. Understand that, Stern. Will you stand guard here with me tonight, Voorhees? And you, Lawrence?
Very clearly, Doctor.
Good. Right. Stern, tell Dr. Auerbach and Dr. Olson what we've found. Ask them to come back and relieve us in the morning. And tell them, please, to confide in no one.
With a reluctant frown, Stern exits. At dawn, Pat, Bob, and Barnes trudge from the plane across the tundra, heading for the main cabin. They enter the mess hall where the others jump out of their chairs as snow sweeps into the room.
You better get some more hot coffee ready.
Find anything, Captain? Not a sign. We poked in at every snowbank within miles.
Barnes flushed a polar bear. Sure did.
Scare you?
Not after I saw it was only a bear. Too cold out there for that.
Didn't find anything, did you? I didn't think you would. When we lose them, they stay lost. Not that it makes much difference. There's nothing going on the radio, nothing coming in. Hey, Tex, don't tell me you got something.
Well, Captain, your General Fogarty's running the temperature. This came in clear about 10 minutes ago, and then it got fouled up again.
Fogarty to Hendry. Take all precautions to preserve aircraft carefully until my arrival. Same to same. Use same precautions with corpses of any occupants. Same to same. Forward detailed description of aircraft. Oh, measurements, approximate weight, and so forth. Important. Fogarty to Hendry. Why haven't you answered? Want immediate answer. Same to same. Radio silence unnecessary. Reference message Fogarty to Hendry. Acknowledge immediately. Fogarty to Hendry. Waiting report. Silence confusing. Same to same. Acknowledge. Same to same. Acknowledge at once.
I gather he wants to hear from
you. You mean there's nothing for me?
You got it all.
Oh, for Pete's sake, I don't believe it. How can a man get to be a general without even knowing?
Stern staggers into the room.
In the greenhouse.
He collapses. The others rush to his side.
Barnes, get out there and watch that corridor.
Somebody bring the first aid kit, please. Captain, this is my job.
Bob, you better start warning everybody else in the camp.
Does that speaker system work from here?
Yes, the switch on the left goes all rooms.
Attention, everybody in camp. Stay where you are and bolt your doors. Our visitor has returned and is dangerous. Stay where you are until notified and bolt your doors. Stay where you are.
Mac, Eddie, and another man enter. Mrs. Chapman waves smelling salts under Stern's nose. He comes too.
Oh. Easy, Doctor, easy. It'll be all right.
What happened, Doctor?
In the greenhouse, I was working. I couldn't see.
Yeah.
Then a blast of cold air, and I heard Olson scream. When I turned, the thing struck at me.
Go on.
I don't remember my head. I must have fallen. When I came to, I saw Olson and Auerbach. They were...
Give me some more of that. Get those axes. Go ahead, Doctor.
They were both hanging from the beams upside down. They were dead. Their throats were cut. I crawled out from under
them. Was it still there when you left?
I couldn't see.
Bob brings Pat an axe.
Here, sir.
Wait for me, Pat. I want to get a picture.
Pat and his men head toward the greenhouse, followed by Scotty. The captain pauses.
This greenhouse has an outside door. I can get out that way.
Captain, we can get to it from here through the generator room.
You two go with him.
You mean you want us to go in?
Seal the door with lumber, oil drums, anything you can find.
That's better. Easy now. You might have to get there. Pat, I want a picture.
You get back with the rest.
Don't be silly. It'll cost you a drink, Scotty.
Buy him a beer.
The four men edge up to the greenhouse door.
Ready, Bob?
No, but go ahead and open it.
Pat opens the door. The thing swings at the captain and shuts the door on his hand. The thing pulls it free. Bob raises his rifle.
Get somebody to prop this door, quick! Something's sure enough to get under this bolt.
Scotty jams wooden beams against the lock.
Did you picture, Scotty?
No, you were in the way.
And the door wasn't open long enough.
Want me to open it again?
No. Bring a hammer and some spikes.
Put that in, wait.
Later, the door's been barricaded shut. Scotty hammers the last nail.
There. That ought to do it.
Dr. Chapman, you're sure there's no other way out? No windows, skylights, or vents of any kind?
Only the front and back door.
These walls solid?
Corrugated iron.
You don't think that...
Carrington approaches, scowling.
Dr. Carrington, we just learned you found a dog in there, bled white by a visitor. You didn't report it. Why?
I didn't consider it necessary.
But it was necessary to let two of your friends in there to be killed.
I posted them as a guard. I was in there myself.
Dr. Stern was right.
Hours.
I looked through that door. They're hanging in there upside down like in a slaughterhouse. I wish you'd seen it.
Isn't there something we can do about it?
They're dead, and our job is to see nobody else join them. As for you, Doctor, you're limited to your room, laboratory, and the mess hall. This thing's finished.
Captain, you have no authority of
Bob.
Any kind to issue such an order. No right to assume.
You better move along.
Bob grips his rifle. Carrington and the scientists turn away as Eddie and Mac come up.
Okay, we got the rear door blocked. If he gets out, he'll have to dig his way through 20 or 30 oil drums and a couple of tons of snow and ice.
Good.
And Bob, next time you use that cannon, raise the sights a little.
I'm sorry, sir. I was too busy to think about that.
It's okay.
Tell them we're going to have to set up a guard here at the junction in the corridor. 2-hour shifts. We'll need volunteers.
I'll be glad to, Captain.
Coming in, Captain.
As they walk off, Scotty grabs his camera. Later in the lab, Carrington sits at a table studying notes. Nicky and two other scientists enter.
You sent for us, Doctor.
Carrington continues to eye his notes.
You said you had news for us, Doctor.
Yes. Yes, I have. Gentlemen, we find ourselves in a battle.
I'm not referring to the minor argument with Captain Hendry, but this creature from a new world. Two of our colleagues have died. The third is injured. Those are our losses, and there may be more. This creature is more powerful and more intelligent than we are. He regards us as important only for his nourishment. He has the same attitude toward us as we have toward a field of cabbages. That is our battle. Only science can conquer him. All other weapons will be powerless. Only...
There must be a way. I've been trying to...
Sorry, I'm very tired. I haven't slept. It's difficult. Difficult to talk. You read my notes, Miss Nicholson.
Doctor, you need some rest.
Yes, I know, but... Please read my notes.
At 9 p.m., I placed the seeds taken from the severed hand of X in 4 inches of earth. I saturated the earth...
She shoots an anxious look at him.
I saturated the earth with 2 units of plasma taken from our blood bank. The condition of the dog found in the greenhouse indicated that blood was a primal factor in the cultivation of the seeds. At 2 a.m., the first sprouts appeared through the soil.
Bynowers?
No.
Yes. I used another 2 units of plasma. At 4 a.m., the sprouts began to take on definite form. I came to the conclusion...
The others eye one another warily.
I see by your faces you don't believe me.
Well, you're going to be
tired. Judge for yourselves.
He leads them into the next room and switches on a light. Their eyes grow wide as they approach a table. A dozen leafy shoots sprout from a box of earth. 2 bags of plasma hang on a rod above it with tubes running into the dirt. Each of the plants pulses at a steady tempo.
It isn't possible.
It reproduces itself at amazing speed.
This would bear out Captain Henry's impression. When he saw the creature in the door of the greenhouse, it seemed to have grown a new arm.
This pulsating, Doctor.
They were breathing.
Yes.
Human plants.
Superhuman.
All of this because of the blood plasma, Doctor?
That's correct. Notice these closer to the source of the plasma, while these farther away.
How many units have we?
Enough, I hope. Do you care to listen to them, Professor Wilson?
Yes, thank you. I should.
Wilson takes a stethoscope from Carrington and puts it on. He holds the bell up to one of the pulsing sack-like bulbs and listens for a moment. Removing the earpieces, he turns away, his head bowed gravely. The others study him.
Well?
Almost like the wail of a newborn child that's hungry.
That's the way I would have described it.
Doctor.
Yes, Miss Nicholson.
Would you mind very much if I... Will you be needing me anymore?
No, just finished typing my notes. Turn them to me. Let no one see them.
She leaves.
Doctor, I think you should get some sleep.
There's too much to do, Professor Wilson.
But your mind can't work if you're exhausted.
My mind's still perfectly clear.
No, it isn't, Doctor. You aren't thinking what's happening there in the greenhouse. He's growing those seeds in there using blood, just as you are. You've seen what one creature like that can do. Just imagine 1,000...
I have imagined it.
Arthur, what if that aircraft came here not just to visit the Earth, but to conquer it, to start growing some kind of horrible army, turn the human race into food for it?
There are many things threatening our world. New stars, comets shooting through space.
But those are theories. This is an enemy right here.
There are no enemies in science, Professor. Only phenomena to study. We are studying one.
Now Nikki sits in her office, typing Carrington's notes. She pulls the sheet of paper out of the typewriter and examines her work.
Come in.
Pat enters. She quickly covers the notes with a book.
Hello, Pat.
Hi. Nikki, I want to ask you something. Has anybody up here been hurt lately? Anybody shot or stabbed or operated on?
No, that what is it in the greenhouse has been our first diversion.
I brought up 35 units of blood plasma 2 months ago. What's become of it?
Why do you want to know?
I wondered why they're not giving it to Dr. Stern. They're giving him blood transfusions instead of plasma. Two live donors. What's Carrington doing with 35 units of blood plasma, Nikki?
I guess you better take a swing at my chin and have a look at those notes. Should be trying to stop you.
He takes the sheet of paper out from under her book. She nervously watches him peruse the notes.
So that's what he's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thanks for not stopping.
He heads for the door.
Pat, would you remember something? He's tired. He hasn't slept since you found that thing. And he's not thinking right. I know him, and he doesn't think the way we do anyway. But he's found something that no one can understand, and until he can solve it, he'll... You know, like a kid with a new toy, he'll just...
Only this toy's level to bite him. Thanks again.
He walks out. She worriedly taps a pencil into her palm. Later, Pat enters the lab with Chapman and the others.
Where's Dr. Carrington?
Sorry, Captain. I have no authorization to give you any...
I'm very busy. I
know you're busy, Doctor. I understand you've been doing a bit of gardening. Where are they?
Why? Right to the nursery, Pat.
They step into the next room.
I don't tolerate intrusions into my laboratory. Please don't touch me.
This is what your late colleagues are doing in the greenhouse, Doctor. Except this is a distinct improvement.
What happened in the greenhouse was not my fault.
We've read your notes, Arthur.
Yes?
I think you should have consulted the rest of us.
I have all the help I need. Your opinion has not been asked.
It has, by Captain Henry, and I've given it to him. I'll repeat it for you. We're facing something unpredictably dangerous. The creature in the greenhouse is obviously multiplying itself in this identical fashion.
And we have no way of finding out how much it can multiply.
It'll need more blood, and it'll make every effort to obtain what it needs.
It's been imprisoned and is therefore harmless.
How can you be sure of our safety? Or more important, the safety of the world.
Think of 1,000 of such creatures. 10,000. Yes, it must be destroyed, and its progeny along with it.
No.
We can burn these. What about that thing in the greenhouse?
You're talking like frightened schoolboys.
You're right, Doctor. I am frightened.
Any destruction would be an outrage, a betrayal of science.
It'd be a betrayal of science, Doctor, but it'll make me and some of the other sleep a lot better if we get rid of it.
There'll be no Captain Benalti.
Finally got a message through, and here's the answer.
Go ahead.
Fogarty to Henry. Carrington informs me Martian alive. You are directed to make effort to keep it alive and protect it against injury. Under no circumstances take action against it until my arrival when weather permits.
You have your orders, Captain Henry. I consider them sane and intelligent.
But, Tex, what about me?
Another thing, Scotty.
What do we do, Pat? Get on that radio and try changing the Army's mind.
That night, a heavy storm blankets the base. Two men stomp through the snow, making their way to the barracks. Inside, Pat sits with Scotty and his men.
Hey! Hey, it's me! Eddie!
A soldier rushes to the door. Eddie and Barnes enter.
What are you doing in here?
We can't take it out there anymore.
We'll have to drop the idea. Got a greenhouse from the outside.
It's blowing so hard you can't see your head in front of your face.
Besides, it can go through any wall as easy as a door.
How could it get through corrugated iron walls?
Use a can opener.
Tell the others we're dropping the outside guard.
Put that hand of yours in some ice water and rub it.
Who's out on the court?
Stone and Wilson, sir.
Barnes.
Yes, sir.
Tell them they're the only ones on guard now.
Yes, sir.
Tell them to watch it.
He switches on an intercom.
Tex.
Here I am.
You won't be there long. We're dropping the outside guards. You better come up here and join the rest of them in the mess hall.
I'll be all right. I got the door braced good and there's no outside windows.
All right, if you want to be brave. Well?
Pat, what are we going to do?
Nikki enters.
Anybody around here want some coffee?
No, but you can come in.
It's the only reason I brought it. I was hoping you might ask me in.
Yeah, I could use
Who wants some?
I could use a half. What were you saying, Scotty?
I was just wondering if that's enough, thanks. What happens if our boyfriend gets lonely and starts strolling around?
Ends up in here. What do we do?
I've been trying to figure that, too.
Nothing seems to hurt it.
$64 question. What do you do with a vegetable?
Boil it.
What'd you say?
Boil it, stew it, bake it, fry it.
Hey, that makes sense.
Cold doesn't bother it.
Maybe Dr. Carrington will ask it to crawl into a double boiler. Or maybe you could borrow a flamethrower from somebody.
Captain, I got a crazy idea. We got lots of kerosene and we could...
Suddenly, they all turn toward the Geiger counter. Bob brings it over.
0.3, 0.4...
Before we start cooking.
0.5, 0.6...
Watch it, everybody. That thing's out of the greenhouse. Be sure and stay together.
0.9. Captain, what about throwing kerosene on it and setting it on fire?
Sure. We can try. Get that.
There's a ball can.
I'll take it, sir.
We'll need something to put it in.
Here's the payoff.
Good.
Here's
another one.
1.2.
We need one more.
Hey, Pat, this ought to work all right.
Good.
Watch that cigarette, Lieutenant.
Do 1.2.
How are we going to set it on fire? Rub two sticks together?
There's a very pistol in my bag.
I'll get it.
If it comes in, you wet it down. And you, Matt, touch it off. And don't miss. You two be ready in case it needs more.
I think you're right, Captain.
Oh, sure.
1.3 now.
You know how to shoot that thing, don't you?
I saw Gary Cooper and Sergeant York.
1.4.
Come here. Get in the corner. Now hold this in front of you. Stay by the light switch.
He gives her a pan.
1.5, 1.6, 7.
What was that?
Sounds like a window. 1.8.
Come off those bikes.
1.9. The needle's hit the top.
The towering thing bursts into the darkened room. Eddie throws kerosene at him. Max shoots it, setting the creature ablaze. Fire spreads across the room. The thing lurches over to Nikki, his arms thrashing and flailing. She ducks behind the mattress pad. He swipes at her and splits the bedding open. Pat hurls more kerosene onto him. The burning creature leaps out a window onto a snowdrift, jumps up, and sprints off. Back inside, the men dash around the room. Pat grabs the blazing mattress from Nikki. Bob shoots a fire extinguisher at it as Chapman bursts in from the mess hall.
Lock that window!
Scotty shoves a mattress into the broken window. Chapman helps Barnes, who cradles an injured arm. Later, in the mess hall, the men barricade the door to the barracks. A soot-covered Pat tends to his wounded hand.
Here you are, sir. This will make your hand feel better.
Thank you, Bob.
He rises and goes over to Mac.
This ought to be enough kerosene, Pat.
Just get it ready.
How's it coming, Barnes?
Oh, it'll be okay.
What makes me mad is that he didn't do it.
I busted it falling over the bunk. Now, listen, everybody. I want you all to stay here. We found a way to fight this thing off, but we burned out of room doing it. I don't think it was hurt much, judging from the way it took off.
About as much effect as a good hot foot.
Yeah, it's sure to come back here again. Now, we don't want to burn up the whole place, so as soon as we're organized, we're going after it. It probably went back to the greenhouse, so we'll start there. In the meantime, stay here. Watch the door into the hallway. And keep your eye on the Geiger counter.
Here are the fire extinguishers.
Who's your electrical expert here?
I can help you, Captain. That's my line.
Can you hook into the intercom system from the corridor?
Oh, easily. We can take one from any of the other rooms.
I can help you on that, too.
Mac, we'll be in the radio room. Let us know when you're ready. You all right?
Yeah, but I'd like to tag along with you.
Haven't you had enough?
Well, if I start burning up again, who's going to put out the fire?
We're very proud of our captain.
They wander out into the corridor.
Now, look.
Put one of the intercoms here. That'll take care of this end.
We'll put another down here at the junction in the corridor. Check them to see if they work through the mess hall.
Right.
Captain, I just thought of something. You said you were going to use kerosene again.
You know anything better?
Or something hotter. We have enough cable to stretch to the greenhouse. Why not use electricity?
You mean your lighting system?
No. No, we can hook in a new transformer Dr. Chapman's been using. It's a high-voltage outfit and will give us plenty of amps.
Enough to burn them?
More than enough.
Well, could you use leads to two poles and catch in between them?
If you insulate the poles.
Sounds good. Bob, give him a hand. Come on, Tex. You go to work. Get Anchorage if you can. Tell them the whole story. Tell them we're in bad shape. The sooner they get here, the better. Tell them to bring hand grenades, mortars, flamethrowers, anything they can think of.
Tell them if I don't get permission to send a story out, I'm going to shoot myself.
You better comb your hair first.
What hair?
Hey, say that again.
Oh, Nikki, not you too.
He's sensitive about his
you
hair.
You too.
I got hair.
Well, it doesn't make you any prettier.
No, no, your breath.
I'm sorry.
He's sensitive about that, too.
I've been very upset lately, my...
Oh, you ninnies. Look, that's
look.
What I mean.
Their breath clouds.
You too. It's getting cold in here.
The heat must be off.
It is off. It's not getting any oil. See if it's the same way in the room across the hall. Tex, where do these heaters get their oil from?
Around behind, outside.
Pat rushes into the corridor.
Hey, Pat! Heat's off in the mess hall.
No. No more oil coming in.
Pat, it's off in there too. Could the tank be empty?
Filled day before yesterday.
The main line could be plugged. Better get outside and fix it.
Probably run smack into our visitor. They'd be waiting for you to do just that.
We underestimate this guy.
Turned off.
Trying to freeze us out, huh?
That isn't going to be hard.
Down to 40 degrees now.
It's 60 below outside.
How long do these rooms hold any heat? Half an hour at the most.
By then we'll all be
stiff
as...
Well, look, if no one goes out to fix that oil line, won't it think of something else?
He'll think the same thing I am. That our only chance to keep warm would be electricity. Heaters, blankets, anything like that.
Yeah. Yes, it could break the circuit. Cut a line anywhere, except at the source.
Sure, the generator room.
Get them all in there.
I'll tell Tex.
Bring any electrical stuff. Food, medicine, blankets, warm clothes, anything you can find. And Mac, bring our flying clothes.
Pat, most of them got burned, but I'll see what I can salvage.
Bob, Eddie, and Redding, the technician, approach.
There's an awful cold in here.
I know, that thing's turned the heat off.
What?
That'll change.
change things.
What are we going to do about it?
I don't know. Next thing he'll think of is the electricity, so we're putting everybody in the generator room and try to fight it from there.
Lieutenant, did you do a good job on the outside door of the generator room?
Houdini'd find it tough getting
it's
in.
It's better than even money. He'll come through this corridor.
Yeah, it's the only way left.
So, too.
You got any fence wire strong enough to take your voltage?
Oh, rolls over, yeah.
That'll work, Lieutenant.
Sure.
What'll work?
Lay it on the ground, here.
Lead overhead and one on each side. When that thing gets to the right spot, juice him.
I don't get you. Where's the fence wire?
Right down here.
Hey, give me those cutters.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about rigging an electric fly trap right here for him to walk into.
What do you mean, fly trap?
Hey, Scotty, get me a hammer and some nails out of the generator.
Sure.
You better get out of the way.
Well, it looks as if they have the situation well in hand.
It's all right with me. I've given all the orders I'm going to give for the rest of my life.
If I thought that were true, I'd ask you to marry me. Here's your coat.
Thank you.
Shut up. I want to keep my mic.
Hey, hammer and nails.
Come down there.
Where do you want us, Captain?
In the generator room, Doctor. All right, move along, please. Everybody, keep moving. Please,
sorry,
keep moving.
General. Change my mind. It's all off.
Keep moving, everybody.
Captain, I want another word.
No time now, Doctor. Move along.
Yes, please.
Make way here. Clear this out.
Eddie brings over fence wire.
Where are those cutters?
Here they are.
Where's your Geiger counter, Bob?
Back down that barrel. I got one, too, Captain.
Go down to the assembly room. If you get anything, come running.
Right. Hey, somebody get me a pair of gloves.
Here, use mine, Eddie.
Later, most of the group waits in the generator room. Carrington paces while others sit huddled under blankets. He steps into the hall and finds Bob and Eddie nailing a long wire to one of the walls. Bob turns to Pat and Redding, who work on the opposite wall.
Leave enough to hook to the overhead wire.
No, I have plenty.
Pat and Bob lay out wire netting under a wooden walkway.
Here we are, Lieutenant.
Yeah, that ought to give us the ground.
There she is, Captain.
Down at 5 degrees now. Perfect for skiing.
I'm going to get a pair of rubber boots, Scotty.
Why?
Insulation really turned the juice off.
Oh, yeah.
Clear back here, Scott.
Where?
Wait a minute, Scotty. You won't need any boots. When it comes, you go back with the others. You don't belong out here.
I didn't belong at Alamein or Bougainville or Okinawa. I was just kibitzing. And I also write a very good obituary to you. Just ignore me, please.
Captain Henry.
Go ahead.
Just hook this thing up. Checking to see if it works.
That's fine. Watch your Geiger counter.
Yes, sir.
Mac, did you hear that?
Every word. I hope that's all I hear.
So do I.
Oh, Captain, here's another message. This one relayed from Washington. Fogarty to Henry. Use every means to protect lives of entire party, but take no steps against your prisoner.
Our prisoner?
There you are again. You can't ignore orders from your commanding officer.
I testify to that effect in my court-martial.
You're doing more than breaking army orders. You're robbing science of the greatest secrets it's ever come to
it. Better go back, Doctor.
Knowledge is more important than life, Captain. We've only one excuse for existing. To think, to find out, to learn.
What can we learn from that thing? Except a quicker way to die.
It doesn't matter what happens to us. Nothing counts except our thinking. We've thought our way into nature. We've split the atom.
Yes, and that sure made the world happy, didn't it?
We owe it to the brain of our species to stand here and die without destroying a source of wisdom.
Captain Henry.
Civilization has given us orders.
Get him out of here.
Come on, Doctor.
Oh, you fools. You'll never hurt it. Wisest.
Go ahead.
Captain, I'm getting a reaction from the Geiger counter.
What's your reading?
Only 0.2, but steady.
Watch it. Tell us any change. Mac, anything your way?
Not a glimmer, Pat.
Watch it.
Here's the operating switch right here.
Thank you.
How can it get cold so quick?
Keep moving around. You're no good if you're too cold.
Must be zero.
Was. Next stop, 5 below.
Come on, Mr. Martian, and get some nice scotch blood. 100 proof. Nothing like it for babies.
Tell him to cut it out.
No. Let him go on. I like those pimples. They keep me warm.
Hey, Scotty, did you get a picture of that thing when it was on fire?
Yeah. I shot one while I was falling backward over the bed. Probably got the ceiling my own big feet.
Captain Henry. Going up a little. 0.4 now.
Hang on. Mac, any change?
Just the same. Only colder.
Probably means he's coming by the mess hall.
Excuse me, sir. I got an idea.
What? Go again.
I knew boy's pretty smart. He might see these wires we got rigged here and sit down and think it over.
Yeah.
If he thinks too long, we're cold meat. What if we met him over there by the junction?
Let him see us there and chase us back here?
Yes, sir, and the less light, the better.
Turn off this light and this one down here. Don't tell me I'm right.
Yes.
Captain Henry, going up, 0.8 now. I'm getting some too, Pat.
Showing here now.
All right, you fellas, both of you, back here and come a running.
Halfway there.
Redding, if you speed up that generator, can you get any more out of it? It'd certainly do no harm to try.
Bill, you and Tex go with him. Nicky, you too.
Pat, no. Good luck to you.
Nicky heads into the generator room.
What's the matter?
I was just wishing we'd had a chance to test this thing to see if it would work.
What if we haven't enough voltage?
Just keep swinging on its arms.
1.2.
It's on its way.
You know, I got a worry. Report from the front, Captain. Lieutenant McPherson has a worry.
This is no joke.
What?
What if he can read our minds?
He's going to be real mad when he gets to me.
1.4. Keep moving around, you guys. Keep it quiet. I remember the first execution I ever covered.
Snyder and Judd Gray. Did you get a picture of that, Scotty? No, they didn't allow cameras, but one
1.6 and going up fast.
Move back 3 seasons. Give him a chance to get a look.
Leave me room to reach that switch.
Stay away from the walls when he hits the juice. Everybody got rubber boots on?
Yes, sir. 1.8.
I thought I heard something.
They stare at the barricaded door.
Getting near the top.
The thing flings open the door at the end of the hallway. He knocks over a flimsy barricade and lurches toward them. The men slowly begin to back up. The thing grabs a beam of wood from the broken barricade and edges closer. About 8 feet tall, his head nearly scrapes the ceiling. Scotty holds up his camera, trying to snap a picture. The thing steps closer and closer. Suddenly, all the lights go out.
The juice is off.
Pat! Carrington turned off the generator.
Oh, bring the flashlight. Eddie, hold him off as long as you can.
Roger.
Watch out, he's got a gun.
Keep away. Keep away. Keep away. I won't allow you to destroy...
Chapman grabs the gun from him.
Get back here, Eddie!
As the thing steps closer, the lights flicker. Then the power comes back on. Still gripping the beam, the thing stares them down. Behind the men, Carrington bursts out of the generator room and rushes up to the creature's side.
Eddie, get back here! Stay away from that wire!
Listen, I'm your friend. Look, I have no weapons. I'm your friend. You're wiser than I. You must understand what I'm trying to tell you. Don't go any farther. They'll kill you. They think you mean to harm us all. But I want to know you, to help you. Believe that. You're wiser than anything on Earth. Use that intelligence. Look at me and know what I'm trying to tell you. I'm not your enemy. I'm a scientist. I'm a scientist who's trying to...
The thing knocks him aside, then steps closer along one side of the walkway.
Well, he gets right in the middle of it, sir.
Pat grips an operating switch attached to the wires.
He's got to be on that walk, Captain.
Eddie flings an axe along the floor. The thing leaps onto the walkway to avoid it. He's 20 feet away.
Right in the middle, sir.
The thing's only inches from the dangling wires. Beneath his protruding brow, his eyes glare fiercely at the men. He comes closer, closer. Pat throws the switch. Bolts of electricity shoot out from the ceiling and walls into the thing's head and outstretched hands. Smoke pours out of his body. As the men watch, lights flicker in the corridor. The thing falls to his knees with bolts and sparks shooting all around him. Charred and blackened, he begins to melt into the floor, growing smaller and smaller.
Oh, that's enough. Turn it off.
Let it go. We don't want any part of it left.
Pummeled by the bolts of electricity, the thing bows down and drops his head between his knees. Beneath a shower of smoke and voltage, he disappears into the floor. With a frown, Pat shuts off the operating switch. A cloud of smoke rises from the middle of the corridor.
I didn't get a picture now, Scotty.
Stunned, the reporter stares wide-eyed. His glove drops from his mouth, and he keels over. Bob gazes down at him, shaking his head. The others warily approach the smoldering spot, now only a charred pile of remains. The men continue down the hall. Later, Tex enters the radio room, followed by Pat, Scotty, and the others. Tex sits at his controls.
This'll take a minute to warm up.
Okay.
We can get through. Is there any reason now why I can't send out my story? Only take 5 minutes.
I guess it's okay. Go ahead, Scotty.
You're beginning to look a lot better to me than you used to.
Hold on, Pat.
You get everything?
Yeah, we burned everything in Carrington's lab and in the greenhouse.
Burnt the arm, too. Nothing left but ashes.
How is Dr. Carrington? He's got a broken collarbone and a bad headache.
Not getting enough voltage.
I'll check the generator for you.
Good.
Anybody want some coffee?
No, but you can come in.
Oh, you better have some. You look awfully tired.
He should look tired. He's had two things on his mind.
We've only had one.
Now our worries are over while our captain is...
Shut up.
Isn't there something you can do about it, Nikki?
I don't know. You know, I'm getting pretty fed up with the North Pole. How much does the captain make a month?
Not very much.
That's a good start. Go ahead.
Enough to support two people?
Not nearly enough.
Oh, Captain, you get flight pay. Yes.
Some for each dependent.
Oh, we can handle that.
Now, look, I'm not going to be railroaded
Captain,
in anything.
Captain, I've got an idea, if you'll pardon me, sir.
This is going to work.
You ought to settle down, sir.
There you are. See?
It'd be so much better for us.
Sure, our captain always flitting around and getting into trouble. You remember that night in Honolulu?
Eddie.
That was pretty bad.
I don't know what they're talking about.
You ought to light somewhere.
See, they know what's best for you.
Mm-hmm. Here we are. Plenty of voltage now. Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Anchorage from Polar Expedition 6. Can you hear me? Over.
Anchorage, reception clear. Stand by.
Press General the button and speak, Scotty.
Captain Henry. Over.
Tell General Fogarty we've sent for Captain Henry. He'll be here in a few minutes. Over.
Roger. Over.
Are there any newsmen there who can hear me? Over.
Place is full up. Over.
All right, fellas, here's your story. North Pole, November 3rd. Ned Scott reporting. One of the world's greatest battles was fought and won today by the human race. Here at the top of the world, a handful of American soldiers and civilians met the first invasion from another planet. A man by the name of Noah once saved our world with an arc of wood. Here at the North Pole, a few men performed a similar service with an arc of electricity. The flying saucer which landed here and its pilot have been destroyed, but not without casualties among our own meager forces. I would like to bring to the microphone some of the men responsible for our success. But as senior Air Force officer, Captain Henry is attending to demands over and above the call of duty. Dr. Carrington, the leader of the scientific expedition, is recovering from wounds received in the battle. Good for you, Scotty. And now, before giving you the details of the battle, I bring you a warning. Every one of you listening to my voice, tell the world, tell this to everybody wherever they are. Watch the skies. Everywhere. Keep looking. Keep watching the sky.
Fade to black. Title cards. The end. RKO Radio Pictures. Credits appear. Cast. Margaret Sheridan as Nikki. Kenneth Toby as Captain Patrick Hendry. Robert Cornthwaite as Dr. Carrington. Douglas Spencer as Scotty. James Young as Lieutenant Eddie Dykes. Robert Nichols as Lieutenant Ken Mac Erickson. And James Arness as The Thing.